Spoiler Piece Theater, the podcast that doesn't give a shit about spoilers. We just want to talk about the movies. My name is Megan Kearns. My pronouns are she, her. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, and I'm a member of Gallica, the Society of LGBTQ Entertainment Critics.
And my name is Dave Riedel. I write and I talk about movies. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association. My pronouns are he, him. And I just picked up a new outlet that I'm going to be writing for, but not yet. So,
well, congratulations.
Announcements coming soon, I guess. Like anyone cares. So
I care. And well, I'm sure all our listeners care, too.
That's right. Everybody cares. Yes. Thank you, listeners, in advance for sending me your congratulatory emails.
That's right. Oh, that's so exciting. Oh, I can't wait to hear more.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say we needed some exciting news because this week Evan is off. So it's just the two of us. So
just the two of us.
Building castles in the sky.
In the sky. Just the two of us.
Just the two of us.
Yeah.
Love a musical interlude, and we don't do them enough.
Not anymore.
No.
I gotta get back on my game.
Yeah, get with it, Dave. Well, the spoiler alert, and this is spoiler piece, there will be another musical interlude when we talk about our films later in a little bit. So that's exciting. And speaking of films, we've got two we're covering, but before we dive into that, check out our Patreon. If you're a member, if you're not, consider joining. Every week we put out bonus episodes if you're a member for $5 a month, and you also get to vote in monthly polls. This week we talk about a holiday rom-com, 2006 Wayne Wang film starring Queen Latifah. That's right, it's Last Holiday, and woo-hoo-hoo, we have some opinions.
Last Holiday.
Is that a song?
That was me trying to sound like a radio.
Oh.
Like, you know. No, that's not a song.
I was like, is that a song? I'm very gullible. I would have believed it. You could have totally.
It should be, though. You could have a Christmas song called Last Holiday.
I mean, there's...
Or an any holiday song.
Oh. I was like, I almost pulled a Whamageddon.
Oh, I haven't heard that yet this year. So,
well, I'm very glad I didn't sing it then, so I didn't Whamageddon you.
Oh, man. I kind of forgot about it. And then I saw like somebody I follow on Instagram, I clicked their thing and it's like, Whamageddon. And I didn't have my sound turned on. So I was like, sweet, doesn't count. But like, yeah, I've made it to the 14th. It's amazing.
Wow, that is. Because yeah, I just heard it a couple days ago on my way to the grocery store. So,
oh, boy.
Yeah. But I always forget about it until I hear it. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to Last Holiday.
We saw that.
We did. And we talked about it. And it was a great time. So go check it out. And if you're not a patron, consider joining, which I think I already said, but that's okay. So the two movies we're going to be talking about this week, we're going to be talking about the documentary Nelly and Nadine, and we're going to be talking about the horror thriller Christmas holiday movie, The Apology. So we're going to kick things off with Nelly and Nadine. And that documentary is directed by Magnus Gerten. Gerten?
Yeah. It's a German name, whatever.
It is a German name. Thank you. So I'm going to give you the synopsis from the press release. And it's a little bit of a lengthy one. You know, I don't like to refer to IMDb when I can avoid it. So here we go. Yeah. This extraordinary documentary follows opera singer Nelly Musée-Voss and writer Nadine Huang, who met and fell in love while imprisoned in Ravensbrück, a German concentration camp, in 1944. Despite being separated in the last months of the war, they later reunite and spend the rest of their lives together. All that is left of the unlikely love story, kept secret for decades, photos, letters, and Super 8 film reels kept in boxes. Stumbling upon these years later, Nelly's granddaughter Sylvie begins piecing together Nelly and Nadine's legacy and uncovering the records of their remarkable love.
Thank you, everyone. That was Nelly and Nadine.
Good night. See you next time.
Yeah. I mean, that's really, you know, all 93 minutes of it, right? I mean, there's more nuance, of course.
Yes.
But
that is a very lengthy synopsis and a very thorough one, too.
But I would venture better than the IMDb summary, yes. So I'm all for it.
Me too. So, Dave, what did you think of this?
Well, overall, I think the subject matter is really fascinating. These two women who, Nelly was in the resistance, which is crazy.
Yes.
This is something worth mentioning. These women were not sent to the concentration camps because they were Jewish, for example. Nelly was in the resistance, and I don't remember why Nadine got sent there. Is it because she was like a Chinese Belgian or something? Or I don't
know. At the very end of the film, like actually kind of after some of the credits, they say why, because Nelly like writes in a letter that it has to do with she helped people escape or something. Like get through the Pyrenees. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I remember that now.
But she wasn't actually in any resistance movement. Not officially. Right.
So Nelly was, and she was also an opera singer. So mm-hmm. she was kind of easy to find. She's actually arrested after a performance. But anyway, getting back to what I thought of this, I think there's a really fascinating story here. And I think some of the interview bits are fascinating. I'm less interested in Sylvie putting this all together. Mm-hmm. Although Sylvie's kind of an interesting character in herself because she's clearly highly educated. She speaks at least three languages.
Yes.
But she lives on a farm, mm-hmm. which is not to say that, you know, farmers can't, you know, be highly educated and speak three languages. But it's just not what you would expect. Because every time she goes to a different country, she speaks the language fluently in that country.
Yeah, she does. Oh,
you speak Spanish and English too. That's amazing. She probably speaks German, although she doesn't have a chance to speak it in the movie. But I feel like this should have been a lot more moving than it was. I think the two bits that really I did find moving, and I don't remember the older man's name, but it's when Sylvia is down in Venezuela mm-hmm. talking to one of their old friends or roommates, or I don't know who he is. But he's talking about Jack and Raymond and, you know, these, two men who were together. And then he's talking about, you know, Nelly and Nadine and everybody's out and there's all these, the Super 8 footage and everyone's having fun. And it just seems mm-hmm. like such an idyllic time. And then somebody says, oh, he looks like Yves Saint Laurent. It's like, yeah, he really does. This one guy is kind of amazing. If you know what YSL looks like and, you can Google it. And I thought that was really fascinating. And then the other thing that I found really fascinating, and I think that this documentarian has made two other documentaries about people that he's found in newsreel footage. And I can't remember whether he's made a documentary about this one or not, but the woman from South Africa who, you know, was rescued from, was it Ravensbrück? Which camp were they all rescued from? Mm-hmm. Yeah. In 45, she's about 8 years old. And Nadine found this woman's mother and found her and got them on a bus that was going to Sweden. And said, if you ever have a daughter, if your daughter ever has a daughter, promise me that, you know, she'll name her daughter Nadine. And then she did. And I just burst into tears.
Me too.
You know, yeah, I was just like, oh my God. I mean, but talk about, yes, I mean, that's probably the least you could have done.
Right.
But at the same time, it's just so touching, you know, and
so nice. So
and it's a very, it's even though it doesn't sound subtle, it's a really subtle way of saying this thing that she did meant the world to me, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I didn't find it, I think the subject matter was really fascinating, but and you know, you see Sylvie get emotional a lot and stuff, but there's so many disjointed people, you know, there's people in Venezuela and there's people coming to France and then there's people over here and there's people selling hats and t-shirts. I made that up. And, It doesn't really kind of feel like it all combines. Mm-hmm. It feels like a mystery where all the pieces are still being pieced mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden it's over. So, that being said though, there's nothing wrong with it. It's, mm-hmm. it's like, I'm not sure what else you could do. They don't unfortunately know a lot about Nadine. And that's one of the things I found kind of curious. Like Sylvie says, Nelly is her grandmother. So she knows all about, you know, Nelly's life. Mm-hmm. Nelly died in 1987 when she was, I don't know, it's like in her early 20s, I think. And when she was deciding between marrying a philosopher and marrying a farmer.
That was so weird to me.
Yeah. And Nelly's funny. Like, well, you got to like pick the one you love most. You
right. Know?
It's like, oh, okay. thanks for the advice, Graham. So anyway, I did like the fact that that there's an ongoing theme of Nelly being an opera singer and hearing her performances because she was famous.
Right.
That's kind of, I didn't really realize that. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. This is a big deal. All one, she was in the resistance, but two, she's famous. Mm-hmm. And so they show records that she's on and, you know, sheet music that she had, you know, with notes from Nadine in it and et cetera. Anyway, so that's all kind of interesting. But Sylvie says, you know, Nadine died in 1972 and she had gone back to Belgium the year before that to, she had gotten sick and gone back to Belgium. And I don't really know anything about where she's buried or this or that. And it's just like, well, this is a fucking documentary. Fucking find out. You know,
yeah.
This seems like a major shortcoming on the director's part. Like there has to be somebody in the Wang family who's still living, you know, or you could at least go look through the archives and right, you know, the Brussels, right. whatever.
And if for some reason it was a dead end, wouldn't you say that? Like, wouldn't you, have yeah. a scene or a text on screen, something indicating that?
Yeah, like the last known you know, family member, Nadine's family member was, you know, Henry David Wang, who wrote M. Butterfly. I just made that up too. Because actually their last name's not even spelled the same way. But it would just be interesting to see that loop closed.
Right.
Because I don't think there's enough to make another documentary about just Nadine. So... who knows? Maybe she's got the more like extensive life. I have no idea, but
I mean, she did create that literary salon with all the women writers and artists. I don't know. That
yeah,
sounds
that's
pretty
true.
Amazing.
Right. So maybe there is like a Nadine yeah. documentary in the works.
Who knows?
And this one's just called Nadine. It'll be like, you know, a non-horror documentary version of X and Pearl, you know? But instead of, you know, there being a bunch of dead people at a table at the end, it'll be people discussing books in a salon. So anyway.
It's a nice juxtaposition.
Yeah, let me bring it back to earth here. So that's, I feel like that's kind of a major shortcoming of the documentary. I think the subject matter is really fascinating. And I think that there are some moments of real emotion that come through, in particular that Zoom call with, can't remember what... the little girl who is now, of course, an elderly woman with, because her daughter, she says, Nadine, the daughter, was born in 1971. So she's-
Oh, Rachel. You know,
right. So that's kind of fascinating. Like more of those things would be interesting. Like just the people, you know, getting together more people that they knew, mm-hmm. whose lives they touched. Now, it could be that all of these people are dead.
That could be.
And the only ones we see, the only reason we see the people we see is because that's all who's left.
Right.
But tell us that. I mean, it feels like there's a lot of, you know, ellipses where there should be like mm-hmm. a full stop. So that's kind of where I come down. How do you feel?
So I really love that you brought that up because I felt like there was kind of something missing, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. And you really articulated what was kind of missing. And also speaking on that, there's also this emotional distance from the material. And I think that has to do with Sylvie herself, because Sylvie somehow did not even know that her grandmother was in a lesbian relationship and had no idea that Nellie and Nadine were in love and were partners. She just thought, oh, that's my grandmother's roommate. Like, what? Like, okay, maybe as a kid, maybe. But like Sylvie, what world are you living in? Come on. Like
in Sylvie's defense, Nadine dies in 1972. So Sylvie was probably still quite young then.
I guess. I don't know. It just seems really strange
to me. It does seem like you're kind of missing the plot.
Right,
there, though,
right. Sylvie. And at no point is she like, wow, I can't believe I didn't see that. Like, what was wrong with me? Like, I mean, it just goes to show like how pervasive heteronormativity is, like where people just don't even see and sometimes refuse to see queer relationships. Yeah. But I also feel, and I feel like I'm knocking Sylvie here. Like, poor Sylvie is having a hard time going through her grandmother's things. Like, there's a reason she takes a very long time. And she's like, well, I guess I got to go through all these belongings now. And because she knew it would be hard. But I still feel like there's this emotional distance. And I don't know if that is just the way Sylvie is, where she's just not very effusive with her emotions, or she's not very emotive, or if it's whomever, like whether it was the director or someone else, whomever was interviewing her just kind of didn't dig deep because of the touchy nature of this intense topic. I don't know, but I wish we'd gotten kind of more emotional resonance from Sylvie. I think that would carry over to more emotional resonance in the film.
Yeah.
Having said that, I did love this. I thought this was great. And it is because this story is so fascinating. And Nellie. And Nellie and Nadine are fascinating women and their relationship is beautiful. And I do love, and I know what you're saying about the editing, and I do agree. But what I do love about the editing is I love how it's going back and forth in time and it's like punctuated by their time in the concentration camp and how we're hearing Nellie's words via letter and like her journal entries, and which later they kind of they're all handwritten in pencil. And then the both of them, when they came back together, they typed up these letters and like journals.
Yeah, they tried to sell it as a book when no one would take it. Gee, I wonder why.
I know, right?
And I know it's like Sylvie's just like, I don't know why anybody published it. And it didn't publish it. And was like, well, it's the whole thing we were just talking about with heteronormativity.
Dumb. Sylvie.
Oh, yay.
But I love the voiceover and I love the actress who is doing the voiceover, I think does a really great job. And it's very clear that Nellie is really poetic. Like her writing is just exquisitely beautiful.
Really, yeah.
Yeah. Like the way she's
quite a fine writer.
Yeah. Like the way she's describing the snow is like powdered sugar. And like, she's describing like the longing for Nadine. It's just, it's so romantic. It's so full of yearning. It's
without
just
being sappy.
Right. Right. No, it's stunning. And so because she's such a great writer, I think that just adds so much more to the story. So I'm so glad they included those letters and the journals and Nellie's words herself. Beautiful, just beautiful. But yeah, and you know, aside from just how fascinating these two are in the story in general, this is so important. It's such an important story because we just don't see enough, still in this day and age, we do not see enough queer films. We do not see enough queer love stories. And you know, it's something that comes up. I feel like there's always a tweet or there's always something on social media or an essay that's like, why do we have to have more queer period pieces? Like, why can't we show modern queer love stories? And, you know, that's fair. But I'm also like, we need these stories because we need to show queer history because queer history has been erased for so long. And we need to show that queer people have always been here. We are here. And so even aside from any flaws that this documentary may have, I think it's just so important for queer representation and queer history. And so I love that. And it's a fascinating story. And these women are amazing. So yeah, I was riveted with this documentary. But yes, there are some things that I think would make it much better, but I still loved it nonetheless.
Yeah, I really liked it, but I'm going to come down as, and by the way, I feel like the need, I have to define my terms here because a lot of times on the show I say he's quite a fine performer. You know, just now I said that Nellie's writing is, you know, it's like she's really quite a fine writer, which I mean in the traditional definition of fine, like of high quality.
Yes.
I don't mean like, oh, it's fine. That's so just want to throw that out there in case anyone's ever confused.
I love that you had to clarify that. But at the same time, you do because language changes and so many people use fine as just like, it's fine.
Yeah, people don't really use fine to be like, oh, his performance was quite fine. Which I do. Yes. I always have. So,
And that comes through in the way you're saying it contextually. But yes, I love that you clarified it. It's great.
I also want to say that I think I know why we're emotionally distant from Sylvie.
Oh,
and you're
tell
not going
to
like it when I say this. It's because she's French. So,
Dave! Dave!
I just did that. I did that on purpose. Because I knew you'd be like, what are you? Come on.
Come on, Dave. Yeah. What?
I don't think that's why. I think, you know, you can be emotionally closed off and be anywhere. So
that is very true.
So I just knew that, like, I couldn't even keep a straight face when I said that.
It's like, what? And you're already like giggling. It's great.
Yeah. I don't know what the emotional distance is. Maybe it's because it's a German filmmaker. I don't know.
Maybe. Or like I said, maybe if, I don't know if he interviewed her, because I know sometimes it's the director, sometimes it's somebody else who's interviewing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they didn't want to ask the really tough questions, or maybe, I don't know. Maybe she's just
there. There could be a million different reasons.
Yeah, who knows? knows? Who knows?
Maybe he asked them, she didn't want to answer. Right. Maybe he didn't ask them. Maybe he did ask and she did answer, but it was an editorial choice because it really slowed down the narrative. I mean, there's a million possibilities.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I named just three.
You did. So. But that's why documentaries are so fascinating, and just the what goes into choose. I mean, editing is fascinating in general with narrative films too, but I feel like with documentaries, I don't know, there's something just because it's like, well, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? And like, because it's also so contingent on your subjects too. And like your interview, right. Your interviewees. And it's just fascinating. And then like, sometimes yeah. you set out to tell one story and then the story goes somewhere else. And
yeah. And I feel like there's sort of a half answer here because, you know, part of the documentary is about Sylvie mm-hmm. learning these things about, you know, her grandmother and Nadine and, for lack of a better term, coming to terms with that. But it's also about her discovering about how other people felt
yes.
about Nellie and Nadine. So it's, and the effect that Nellie and Nadine had on other people. Yes. And I wonder if maybe it's not so important in the director's mind. What's Ooh. It's more about the overall as opposed to any individual's particular recollection.
That's a really great point. And I'm actually really glad you said that because you also reminded me of something else that I really, really liked. The daughter of the guy, I don't know which guy, but I think the guy who looked like Yves Saint Laurent.
YSL.
Yeah. And the daughter, and she was like, yeah, she's like, my father was living a double life. He was married because he wanted to have children, but he also had this lover who was a man. And I love that she says, it made me look at my own sexuality. And right. I thought about how, you know, sure, they were all together, you know, Nellie and Nadine and my father and his lover, Luis, but they were still closeted. Like they still had to, like my father still had to live this double life and hide part of himself. And who wants to do that? And I don't want to do that. And I was like, oh my God, did this make this woman realize that she's queer and that she's like embracing it? If so, that's amazing. And even if she doesn't, just the fact that she's questioning her sexuality, that's amazing. And so I yeah. love the impact of that too. It's so great to see.
Yeah, it was, I was kind of surprised when she said that, but then I was yeah. like, oh yeah, it kind of makes sense though. You know,
it does, but yeah, but I really think it does speak to what you're saying that you really said so eloquently about how this the crux of the film really is, yes, it's their love story, but it's also how their love impacted so many other people. And I think that yeah. really is so beautiful and so great.
Oh, hey.
Hey-ho.
So yeah, and it also becomes clear just by what we said, we're talking about, you know, Rachel and her daughter.
Yes.
Just what Nadine, there's a very specific example of what Nadine did. Because, you know, she could have chosen anybody to get on those buses to Sweden, and she's like, you two, come on.
Yes.
You know? So
yes.
yeah.
Also that archival footage of little Nadine? No, that couldn't. No, it was. It was Yeah, it was the archival footage and the kid looking so excited anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was kind of amazed, by the way, that archival footage of all of the women. I think that these are women who have been rescued by the Swiss.
Yes.
What is the you donate money to them every year? They have the Santas out.
The Red Cross? The Salvation Army?
The Swiss Red Cross.
I don't know. The Salvation Army?
Yes.
I don't know.
The Swiss Red Cross, you know, rescued a bunch of these women.
Yes.
And just the joy on some of these women's faces.
Yes.
And it's just like, you've just been through probably the worst thing that can ever happen to a human, but here you are with just this jubilance on your face.
Right.
Maybe because you know nothing can ever be worse. I don't know. But like, it is kind of fascinating to yeah. see all of these women just looking like, God damn, this is amazing. You know?
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and the documentary doesn't shy away. Like as we hear Nellie talk about it through her journals, the documentary doesn't shy away from the horrors that they experienced in the concentration camps, of course. Yeah. But yeah, seeing the women's joy is just palpable. It's wonderful. But I do love that the documentary starts off by we see a couple of people, and then we see Nadine's face, and the filmmaker is narrating, and he says, he's like, Nadine's face has always fascinated me, and I didn't know why she had the look she had. And later he's like, oh, now I know. It's because she didn't know if Nellie was okay. And so she has this yeah. kind of questioning look on her face where everyone else is so joyous and she's just still very stern and like oh, you know, there's this tension, even though she's being rescued. But yeah, but it's like, oh, but then they reunite and it's beautiful. And then they live in Venezuela and it's great. And they have a wonderful life together. It's so nice. And I think there's something else that's really beautiful that these two people found love in the most horrific of environments. Like, and the fact that they were each other's kind of salvation and source of strength to like go on. Like that's just amazing. Just stunning.
I don't have the intestinal fortitude for any of that shit.
So. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully I actually never find out for real.
Hopefully not. Yeah. Hopefully none of us find out. Jeez. Yeah.
I guess that's how I should couch it. You know, it's like, no, I'll be totally, you know, noble, whatever. Who knows?
Who knows indeed. And Dave, I was going to say, do we have any final thoughts? But I know you do because the song, Dave.
Oh, yeah. So over the closing credits is one of my favorite songs ever, which this will surprise anybody considering how much I live to like listen to metal. One of my favorite songs ever is Lilac Wine. And this version comes over the closing credits that I've never heard. It's like, oh, that's Lilac. Because I recognize the, you know, the chord progression. And then Nina Simone starts singing. And I love Nina Simone. I had no idea that she, like, no idea. I don't know what rock I've been living under. But, and then I just started singing along to it. And it's a different key from the one I'm used to, but that's fine. Because she had a voice that is unlike any other voice. So, of course, she would do it in a different way. But
very true.
Just, it's just such a beautiful song. And so yeah, I will be, I didn't have time to do it before the show, but I will be finding it on whatever my music streaming service is of choice. And I will pay for it too, so that Nina Simone's estate can have the money and hopefully not just the publisher.
Love it. So. It is such a beautiful song. And
what
a great way to end the documentary. Like, wow. Yeah.
Also considering somebody, you know, like they probably made lilac wine because it's a French farm. At some point they're like, oh, we will drink the lilac wine. You know.
There could have been that element too. Who knows?
I don't think that probably happened. That's just.
But I like how you're trying to piece it all together with the rationale. Yeah. Okay. Now, do you have any other final thoughts?
No, I don't. I've definitely talked enough.
All right. Well, let's move on to our next and final film. The horror film, The Apology. So The Apology stars Anna Gunn and Linus Roche and Janine Garofalo in a supporting performance. And this is written and directed by Allison Lockstar. And here is the synopsis, the press release. 20 years after the disappearance of her daughter, recovering alcoholic Darlene is preparing to host her family's Christmas celebration again with the help of her friend and neighbor Gretchen. Late Christmas Eve, Darlene's estranged ex-brother-in-law, Jack, arrives unannounced, bearing nostalgic gifts and a heavy secret. Soon, Darlene finds herself caught.
Gee, I wonder what it is.
I know, right?
Sorry.
Soon, Darlene finds herself caught between reason and ruthless instinct. Trapped together by a dangerous storm, a battle of wits escalates to a violent game of revenge. Wahaha. Dave is looking quizzical.
That's not even accurate. That's just, I mean, first of all, you described it as a horror movie, which is how it's being presented.
Yes.
That's not your term specifically, but I would describe this movie as horrific.
Ah!
And the other thing that I will say is, I'll say two other things. One, we have always taken for granted and shunned Janine Garofalo, and we should not have, because she's always good whenever she shows up. And then you're like, what the fuck has happened to Janine Garofalo? Like, oh, the 90s ended and everybody stopped wearing black, you know, horn rim glasses. And they're like, ah, fuck Janine Garofalo. Or whatever, you know, she was too feminist or whatever the fuck problem people had with her. So there's that. And then the other thing is, this is a 90 minute movie made from a 30 minute idea.
Yes.
So this would be, now it's not like a Twilight Zone episode because it's too obvious.
I thought about
face.
That though. That's hilarious. I thought about, I'm like, this is like an anthology.
This is like an episode of an anthology show. And I feel like if you took this movie and you know, you sliced 60 minutes out of it and just kind of restructured it a little bit, you could have like a super tight little cat and mouse fucking revenge thriller. But instead, you've got this weird fucking, like, the moment Linus, first of all, Linus Roche doesn't play anybody except bad guys, Bruce Wayne's dad, and the DA from DA. Law and Order. That's it. That's all he plays. Okay. So when he shows up, I mean, for Christ's sake, he's a fucking alien in a Julianne Moore movie. Okay. I mean, it's just like he plays bad. He is.
I'll take
it. He plays bad dudes. That's all I'm saying. So when he shows up at like midnight, you know, on a snow, the only good thing about Linus Roche showing up is this woman's 19 years sober and she's about to start drinking again because it's like the night before the 20th anniversary of her daughter's disappearance, and his arrival stops her from like being able to drink because she goes and she answers the door. And it's like, okay, it's the one thing he's good for. And now we've got to sit through the rest of this. And it's just like, you know, there's all these dumb, like fucking screenplay devices, like the power keeps going out because, but only momentarily because it's a snowstorm and it's just like, and the phone lines don't work. Actually, well, he cut the phone lines, but you know, the cell phones don't work because, you know, this, the tower is getting blocked by the snow. It's just like, oh, for Christ's sake, if this were 27 minutes with one commercial break, this could have been amazing. But instead, we have to watch Anna Gunn, you know, get attacked by Linus Roche and then escape from him and then knock him down a flight of stairs and then, for some reason, not tie him up well enough and then get attacked by him and then knock him down a flight of stairs. She does that. He falls down a flight of stairs three times.
Yeah.
Three.
Yeah.
Three times.
Not a lie. That's true.
Like, what the fuck, you know? And also, I just, you know, I really wish that I didn't know as much about movies as I do. And this is not me, like bragging or anything like that. This is just like, I just wish I didn't know because he's got that gun. And it's just like, at what point is she going to take the gun and turn the tables on him? I am waiting. Just fucking get to it. The only thing, aside from cutting an hour out of this, that could have fixed it was if for some reason, and I don't know why, but for some reason, when Janine Garofalo comes over because she thinks she hears that gunshot, yes, which of course she did, if she comes over and then it turns out she was in on the plan too and she was actually his lover from back in the day and they killed the daughter together, but she didn't. She's just like her friend who shows up and she helps her, like, you know, fuck up Linus Roche.
That is correct.
But there does seem like a moment because, you know, he's doing that whole thing. He's like, oh, so you're the, like, the friend from Alcoholics Anonymous and you must have had a hard life because your husband was so-and-so and he was sleeping with all those other women. And it makes it sound like he's going to say something like, hey, and you fucking hit him in the head, like a stab him with an ice pick, which he doesn't say. But like, it would have been interesting if there was some sort of darkness in her character that we could have pulled out. Instead, it's just Janine Garofalo using her sheer talent to inject her character with some sort of personality when she's just, you know, I mean, she's just there. She didn't even need to be there. It's nice to see Janine Garofalo. It really is. But there's no reason for that character to be there. You know, she's got to be able to explain. Anna Gunn has to be able to explain. Mm-hmm. Janine Garofalo is the audience, and Anna Gunn is explaining to the audience, us, Janine Garofalo, what has all happened. But before Janine Garofalo, because they're preparing a Christmas dinner, she's hosting Krimulita, and then Janine Garofalo goes home, but before she goes home, they watch an interview of Anna Gunn talking about the 20th anniversary of her daughter's disappearance. I mean, what the fuck is the point of all of this? Oh my God. This almost makes me wonder if somebody had, if Alison Starlock had written this as like a tight 30-minute thing, and they're like, man, this is good. Let's make this a feature, Alison Starlock. And she's like, okay. Kind of wonder if that's it. Because this is just, you know, a good idea in the sense that, you know, you got people trapped in a snowstorm, always tense. Mm-hmm. Snow is always good for, you know, because you can get buried in the snow.
Yeah.
Freeze to death. You can, like, if you're an episode of Magnum PI, you can rip off all your clothes and have sex to stay warm.
What? What Magnum PI are you watching?
That's an episode of like with a flashback of like, you know, Higgins' father has like a bunch of illegitimate children.
Oh, good
and
God.
That's the story behind one of them. Yeah.
Oh, wait, that also, wait a minute. That stole a plot line from Star Trek because Spock gets it on with Mariel Hemingway. Or Mariel Hemingway, one of the Hemingway women.
Yeah, isn't Mariel Hemingway like?
Okay, maybe not.
Wasn't
Mariel.
She 15 in Manhattan?
Yeah. Okay, so. Not her. No. It's somebody else. But anyway, yes, they have. There's a snowstorm outside, and they have sex to
stay alive.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, you got to do what you got to do. You know. Sometimes you got to get naked and get down with a Vulcan.
You know? This episode has officially gone off the rails.
Yeah. Well, it's just because this is a bad movie. You know, it's just like, I don't know how you feel. So why don't you tell me how you feel?
Oh, I didn't like it.
Okay.
I was very excited for this because one, Anna Gunn is so fantastic on Breaking Bad. So fantastic. Great, great performance. For over the course of the show, and a thankless performance because she got so much sexist hatred from a lot of the toxic fan base, and she was incredible. So I'm always excited to see her. I've seen her in a couple films afterwards, and even though they weren't great, she was great. So I was excited. And Janine Garofalo, same thing. Always excited to see her. And I love a home invasion film. So I'm like, yes, this sounds interesting. I'm so here for it. And yeah, this movie could have been over in like 15 minutes, 20 minutes. And here's the thing. There are home invasion movies where you could argue the same thing. Like, oh, it could be over in like 15, 20 minutes. But it is a 90-minute movie. And it is tense and riveting and quickly paced. Like, Your Next, which is one of my
Your
favorites.
Next. So such a great
good.
One.
So good. But there's so many other recent ones, too, that are really great. Like the Megan Fox one, Till Death. There's also...
That one is surprisingly good.
Right? There's also another one that's on Shudder, Violation, which is, it is a rape revenge film. It is really difficult to watch, but it is fascinating. And it's also kind of a twist on the home invasion thing. Panic Room, which is not new, but so great.
Yeah.
Lucky, See for Me. Like there's so many. Resurrection has a little bit of that, which is also great. Like there's a million other ones, like, you know, The Purge and Strangers and Funny Game. Like there's just so many. There's so many home invasion films that are fascinating. And this sadly is just not one of them. And yeah, I didn't like the way this was written. I didn't like the cinematography. I didn't like everything is just very murky and difficult to see and not in a kind of like stylized way. Yeah. And you know, I think there's something interesting here that it's trying to explore with the notion of justice and revenge and apologies and taking accountability, because she keeps holding him to task to take accountability and forcing him or pushing him to admit what really happened and what he did, because he initially says like, oh, he's like, I have to tell you something. And then it's the fact that, you know, it's about your daughter. And then, you know, he says, oh, we kissed because she kissed me. And which Anna Gunn knows immediately he's full of shit. Like that didn't happen because her daughter was like 16 and this was her uncle. So she knows that.
Uncle by marriage, it's
right.
Gross.
It's but still gross.
Not as gross.
Right.
As you think.
It's like splitting hairs here of grossness.
Right.
Yeah. But like, so she's
still categorically gross.
Still gross. Because he's known her since she was a baby. It's not even like he just married into this family. Like,
oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I always forget about that.
Yeah.
Because
so,
she, Anna Gunn says, is like, you know, your daughter was her best friend.
Yeah.
And it's like, and then I was just like, ew.
Ooh, so gross. So gross. Yeah. But yeah, so he's clearly lying. And then there's this, you know, it's very drawn out. And then she finally gets him to confess that, oh, no, you know, she didn't kiss me. I kissed her. And then he's like, oh, and then we had sex. And then she also knows that's full of shit. And then he finally admits, oh, no, I raped her. And it's just, it's horrifying, of course. And I get what the film is doing. Like, I get that. And it's interesting to think about accountability, because so often in a revenge film, all the protagonist is looking for is vengeance. And it does, and oftentimes they don't really explore the ramifications of what happens when you do get vengeance, because it's like, oh, the movie's over and that's it. And as far as the film is concerned, we accomplished that. We achieved our mission. Check the boxes. But that's not really where, like, if you're getting into grief and trauma, that's not where it ends. It doesn't end. It never ends. It's ongoing, and you have to learn how to live with it and deal with it. So I kind of like the notion of dealing with accountability, but at the there's a problem with that, probably because I've been in therapy way too long. But like, a narcissist is never going to admit their culpability. And I just don't buy that Linus Roche's character would ever admit to culpability. Even in the last moment when, you know, he's like, oh, I want you to kill me. And she makes the deal like, oh, you know, I'll kill you if you tell me everything and don't leave anything out. And I just don't buy that someone like that would ever admit, for one. Yeah. And for two,
I also don't buy that she would record over her daughter's last song.
I don't buy that either. It doesn't feel
not
authentic.
Even a recorded confession.
Right, right. And so that doesn't feel authentic on either count. And then also, like, I don't know. There's also the notion of like relying on police for justice, which is something that comes up in Promising Young Woman, which I had a problem with, and I kind of have a problem with it here. But at the same time, I kind of like that Janine Garofalo is like, don't kill him. Not because she thinks he deserves to live, but because she doesn't want Anna Gunn to like get in trouble, which I do love that part of the film. Like, their friendship is really sweet and really supportive. And I do love that. And I know you said, like, why is Janine Garofalo here? And I totally get what you mean. But I also kind of love that she's there, just besides the fact that she's great. But I love it in the film because when he's trying to manipulate them, and by the way, I was getting a vibe where he was like, oh, I know why you hung around, because I got the vibe that he was trying to insinuate she's like bisexual or lesbian or into Anna Gunn, which maybe she is, who knows? But I love.
But they kind of like bring that up and then just table
it instantly. But what I love is that she's like, I know everything about her, and of course I'm going to be there for her. And like, Anna Gunn's like, yeah, we know everything about each other. Of course I told her. And Janine Garofalo's like, I would never judge her. Like, I'm her friend. And I love that kind of loyalty and support that we just see, that just dedication to each other. And I think that's really beautiful. So I feel like there's good ideas here. Like, it is wrestling with some really fascinating ideas. I just don't think it knows what to do with them, unfortunately. And, or maybe it just doesn't know how to do them in a feature length of time or in a visual medium. I don't know.
Yeah.
But there is something here. There is a kernel of a really great premise and some good ideas and their friendship, which I think is really fantastic to see.
You know what, how this would also work? If like two one-act plays.
Yeah.
On the same bill.
Yeah.
You know, if this were like a 1 hour, one act play,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe not even that long, but like, you know, one act can be about an hour. And if you had it, like if the, you know, you had two, like, I don't know, like lots of famous playwrights have short plays. I mean, Sam Shepard, wordy though he is, has short plays. So that might be interesting too. I just think that there's just so much filler here. There's so much like.
There is.
But you also, what were you going to say?
No. I was just going to say, like, there's so much just with her addiction and her recovery. Like, that's like barely scratched the surface. And that could have been interesting to delve into more.
Well, and this, the whole like underlying thing, the whole underlying reason for this story's existence, which is the, you know, disappearance of Anna Gunn's daughter, is just so ugly on the face of it.
Yeah.
Just like the idea of this 16-year-old disappears, and then you've got her ex-uncle by marriage who shows up unannounced, and it's just like, and you know, I had made the mistake of looking at the cast list before, and I'm like, there's only one dude in this movie. Well, I guess I know what his role is.
Right?
And I just was thinking, you know, this is really, in this instance, and this is not what they intended or anything like this, it just seems exploitative and ugly.
Yeah.
To make that subject matter the subject of this sort of aimless, not revenge fantasy, because like you said, it's going for something bigger than that. And for that, yay.
Agreed.
But I think if you want to see a movie where revenge has gone wrong, just I don't know if you would agree or not, but Unforgiven is sort of my benchmark for revenge ain't going to get you anywhere except probably dead or having to leave your home and go to California and try to prosper in dry goods because you've made a mess of everything.
Yeah, that is because, a really great revenge gone wrong film. You are right. Yeah.
Yeah. All the revenge that you're taking, oh, it got the wrong people. The people you care about killed. Whoops. You know.
Whoops-a-daisy. Yeah. Or if you want another revenge film that actually is satisfying in the revenge, but is also doing something really interesting with the inversion of the male gaze into the female gaze, there is the film Revenge, which is a rape revenge film and is amazing. And it's also on Shudder. And I love it so much because it's some of the most fantastic cinematography and it is just visceral and great. But yeah.
You know, it's bizarre. Every time, and you have talked about Revenge before.
Oh, because I love it.
I always think of the Kevin Costner movie.
Oh, yeah, no, not that one.
Yeah, not that one. Not that one, everybody. No, that's not a good movie.
No, the woman-directed one with, I think it's with Coralie Farjiat. Yeah, that director. Yeah. But yeah, it's amazing. Right. But yeah, but it's a film that on the surface looks like just a regular, like it's just going to be a regular kind of whatever revenge film. And no, it's actually doing some kind of interesting things visually. But anyway, yeah, no, Unforgiven is an amazing film for that reason because, yeah, that's the thing. And like, there are other films, not many of them, but there are other films that do show the hollowness of vengeance, which is really fascinating because revenge is so prevalent in our films. Like, it's such a trope. And there's a reason we keep coming back to it over and over and over again. But so rarely, I'm sticking with it, so rarely do they actually look at the consequences of it. And so, yeah, so I want to give this credit for, like I said, doing something different, but yeah, it just unfortunately did not work for me and clearly did not work for you.
No, it really didn't. I wouldn't say this was painful. This was just more of a like, oh, fuck, come on.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I was feeling.
Yeah, it just felt like a squandered opportunity.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, yeah.
I've made fun of Linus Roach before, and I actually think he's okay, but like...
This is just such a
part that just like I wouldn't wish on anybody, you know, because not only is it just like kind of dumb, it's just for that reason, it's hard to act like he doesn't, you know, Anna Gunn comes across pretty well, all things considered. And so does Jeanine Garofalo.
Agreed.
But poor Linus Roach is just like, or Roche or whatever. He's just sitting there being like, no, but and it's like, I don't really, I mean, we already know you're a liar, so. You're not delivering this. Yeah, it's also transparently like just bullshit everything he says. And I don't think it's Linus Roche's fault. I think it's, you know, it's like, you know, write a deeper, you know, write a smarter character. Because that's the other thing. If you've been able to keep this a secret for 20 years, are you really just going to come over on Christmas Eve and be like, I raped and killed her. Shoot me. Is that really how it's going to be?
Right. Like, what is his motivation?
Just a lot of his motivation is because it's in the script and he was hired to do it. You know?
But like, has he been really so racked with guilt? Because nothing about him leads me to believe that he's really so racked with guilt that he can't live anymore.
I mean, I kind of think that maybe, now I don't know why this would be, but maybe he was just, you know, they had like a one night thing before... she and her husband split up and then he and his wife split up.
Yes.
And, you know, he tries to like put the moves on her and she's like, nope. And maybe he was just coming over cause he wanted to like, he's lonely. He wanted to bone. And then he's like, well, that didn't work. So now I'm going to admit that I killed her daughter. I don't know.
Which, you know, I get the first part. Okay. But yeah, the second part, that's just absurd.
You won't sleep with me. Well, guess what I did to Sarah? You know, I mean, it's just like, what?
I don't think that's going to win her over, dude.
I don't think so either. And that's not, I don't think that's what's intended,
no.
But
actually I kind of think it is. Cause he's like, we can work through this. Don't call anybody. It's just between us. So I'm like, does he think they can work through this? Question mark.
I don't know. We've used the question mark twice tonight. We've each used it.
We have.
Oh, Evan would be so proud.
Hi, Evan.
Yeah, it's a bad movie, so.
Yeah. All right. Let's do a recap. Nellie and Nadine opens in theaters today in New York. So hopefully it will open in a much wider release soon. I would say see it. What would you say, Dave?
Yeah, I'd say see it, sure.
All right. So keep your eyes, if you're not in the New York area, keep your eyes out for when it does come near you or on streaming. And then The Apology also opens in theaters today and is also available on streaming today via AMC Plus and Shudder. I think it's safe to say we would say skip it.
We would say skip it. But if you do decide to see it, tell everybody it's called The Apology and just see if you get looked at funny. Try that.
I don't know why that tickled me so much, but boy, did it.
I got another one for you. Did I ever tell you that my dad used to try to convince me that the Beatles was pronounced the Beatles? Like when I was really little. Yeah. Like, oh, we should listen to the Beatles. I'm like, what?
That's amazing. Now I know where you get it from.
Yeah. So.
Well, on that note, with the Beatles, there's been so much music talk, Nina Simone.
My apologies, everyone.
So much music talk this episode. I love it. We want to thank you so much for listening to us, listeners. We truly appreciate you. And a huge thank you to our amazing editor, Otto Klammer. Otto, thank you so much for all you do week in and week out. You rock.
Woo, Otto.
You can find Spoiler Piece Theater anywhere you get podcasts. We're on all of the platforms. You can also find us at our website, spoilerpiece.com. You can find us on social media. We are all over the place. We're at Spoiler Piece at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, TikTok. Follow us in all the places. Also, we have merch, so be sure to check out at our website our merch. You can go to our TeePublic store and you can get t-shirts, hoodies, notebooks, mugs, pillows, the whole tote bags, the whole shebang.
I have a pillow. It's awesome.
You do. Don't you have a t-shirt too? I think you do.
I have a t-shirt that I haven't worn yet, and I have a mug that I have used.
Nice. So, yes, that's right, because yeah. I have a picture of it. But anyway, go check out our merch. It's awesome. You can also reach out to us. In addition to social media, you can email us at spoilerpiece@gmail.com, or you can give us a call
at 862-21-PIECE.
Leave us a voicemail message, text us, let us know, hey, I loved The Apology and you two fools are wrong. Or let us know you also you also love Nellie and Nadine. We love hearing from you. We love hearing your opinions on the movies we cover. We love hearing your questions and your thoughts about other movies. So we just love hearing from you. So reach out if you'd like to. And if you like the show, please consider rating and reviewing us at ratethispodcast.com/spoilerpiece. That will take you to your preferred platform of choice. You can rate us. You can also rate us directly at Apple Podcasts, which really helps us out, and also at Spotify. That helps us get the word out about the show so more people can listen. And that's always a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really, really like the show, consider joining our Patreon if you're not already a patron. For $5 a month, you get access to weekly bonus episodes as well as our entire back catalog of episodes, which is about 300 approximately episodes. You also get to vote in monthly polls. This week, we talked about the holiday rom-com starring Queen Latifah, Last Holiday, and it was a blast of a time. Not the movie, but the conversation.
Yeah. The conversation was a hoot. The movie.
So you know you want to check that out. So if you're a patron, go check it out. And if you're not, like I said, consider joining. And thank you so much to our patrons, because we truly appreciate all of your support.
Indeed.
So my name is Megan Kearns. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, and I'm also a member of Gallica. You can follow me on Twitter at OpinionSWorld or on Instagram and Letterboxd at TheOpinionS.
And I'm Dave Riedel. I write and I talk about movies. I darn socks. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, and you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. I'm at Dave Sees Movies.
And we'll see you next time. And maybe Dave will be knitting some socks.
Maybe. Bye, everyone.
Bye.